animal, but a beast nonetheless. Anakin. In the Force, Dooku could feel Kenobi's disapproval of Skywalker's boasting. And he could also feel Kenobi's effortless self-restraint in focusing on the matter at hand. This time, we do it together. Dooku's sharp eye picked at the tightening of Skywalker's droid hand on his lightsaber grip. I was about to say exactly that. Fine, then. Time to move this little comedy along. Dooku leaned forward, and his cloak of armor weave spread like wings. He lifted gently into the air and descended to the main level in a slow, dignified force glide. Touching down at the head of the situation table, he regarded the two Jedi from under a lifted brow.
Your weapons, please, gentlemen. Let's not make a mess of this in front of the Chancellor.
Obi-Wan lifted his lightsaber into the balanced, two-handed guard of Ataro, Qui-Gon style, and Yoda's. His blade crackled into existence, and the air smelled of lightning. You won't escape us this time, Dooku.
Escape you? Please.
Dooku allowed his customary mild smile to spread.
Do you think I orchestrated this entire operation with the intent to escape? I could have taken the Chancellor out system hours ago, but I have better things to do with my life than to babysit him while I wait for the pair of you to attempt a rescue.
Skywalker brought his lightsaber to a sheen ready, hand of black love durasteel cocked high at his shoulder, blade angling upward and away. This is a little more than an attempt, and a little less than a rescue. With a flourish, Dooku cast his cloak back from his right shoulder, clearing his sword arm, which he used to gesture idly at the pair of super battle droids still on the entrance balcony above.
Now please, gentlemen, must I order the droids to open fire? That becomes so untidy. What with blaster bolts bouncing about at random? Little danger to the three of us, of course, but I should certainly hate for any harm to come to the Chancellor.
Kenobi moved toward him with a slow, hypnotic grace, as though he floated on an invisible repulsor plate. Why do I find that difficult to believe? Skywalker mirrored him, swinging wide toward Dooku's flank. You weren't so particular about bloodshed on Geonosis.
Ah. Dooku's smile spread even farther. And how is Senator Amidala?
Don't. The thunderstorm that was Skywalker and the Force boiled with sudden power. Don't even speak her name. Dooku waved this aside. The lad's personal issues were too tiresome to pursue. He knew far too much already about Skywalker's messy private life.
I bear Chancellor Palpatine no ill will, foolish boy. He is neither soldier nor spy, whereas you and your friend here are both. It is only an unfortunate accident of history that he has chosen to defend a corrupt republic against my endeavor to reform it.
You mean destroy it? The Chancellor is a civilian. You and General Kenobi, on the other hand, are legitimate military targets.
It is up to you whether you will accompany me as captives.
A twitch of the Force brought his lightsaber to his hand with invisible speed, its brilliant scarlet blade angled downward at his side.
Or as corpses.
Now there's a coincidence, Kenobi replied dryly as he swung around Dooku to place the Count precisely between Skywalker and himself. You face the identical choice. Dooku regarded each of them in turn with impregnable calm. He lifted his blade in the Makashi salute and swept it again to a low guard.
Just because there are two of you, do not presume you have the advantage.
Oh, we know, Skywalker said, because there are two of you. Dooku barely managed to restrain a jolt of surprise. Or maybe I should say, were two of you, the young Jedi went on. We're onto your partner, Sidious. We tracked them all over the galaxy. He's probably in Jedi custody right now.
Is he?
Dooku relaxed. He was terribly, terribly tempted to wink at Palpatine, but of course, that would never do.
How fortunate for you, Quite simple in the end, he thought. Isolate Skywalker, slaughter Kenobi. Beyond that, it would be merely a matter of spinning Skywalker up into enough of a frenzy to break through his Jedi restraint and reveal the infinite vista of Sith power. Lord Sidious would take it from there. Surrender. Kenobi's voice deepened into finality. You will be given no further chance. Dooku lifted an eyebrow.
Unless one of you happens to be carrying Yoda in his pocket, I hardly think I shall need one.
The Force crackled between them, and the ship pitched and bucked under a new turbo laser barrage, and Dooku decided that the time had come. He flicked a false glance over his shoulder, a hint of distraction to draw the attack, and all three of them moved at once. The ship shuddered, and the red smoke surged from Anakin's spine into his arms and legs and head, and when Dooku gave the slightest glance of concern over his shoulder, distracted for half an instant, Anakin just couldn't wait anymore. He sprang, lightsaber angled for the kill. Obi-Wan leapt from Dooku's far side in perfect coordination, and they met in midair, for the Sith Lord was no longer between them. Anakin looked up just in time to glimpse the bottom of Dooku's rancor leather boot as it came down on his face and smacked him tumbling toward the floor. He reached into the Force to effortlessly right himself and touch down in perfect balance to spring again toward the lightning flares, scarlet against sky blue, that sprayed from clashing lightsabers as Dooku pressed Obi-Wan away with a succession of weaving, flourishing thrusts that drove the Jedi's blade out of line while they reached for his heart. Anakin launched himself at Dooku's back, and the Count half-turned, gesturing casually while holding Obi-Wan at bay with an elegant one-handed bind. Chairs leapt up from the situation table and whirled toward Anakin's head. He slashed the first one in half contemptuously, but the second caught him across the knees, and the third battered his shoulder and knocked him down. He snarled to himself and reached through the Force to pick up some chairs of his own. And the situation table itself slammed into him and drove him back to crush him against the wall. His lightsaber came loose from his slackening fingers and clattered across the tabletop to drop to the floor on the far side. And Dooku barely even seemed to be paying attention to him. Pinned, breathless, half-stunned, Anakin thought, "If this keeps up, I am going to get mad." While effortlessly deflecting a rain of blue-streaking cuts from Kenobi, Dooku felt the Force shove the situation table away from the wall and send it hurtling toward his back with astonishing speed. He barely managed to lift himself enough that he could backroll over it instead of having it shatter his spine.
"My, my," he said, chuckling. "The boy has some power after all."
His back roll brought him to his feet directly in front of the lad, who was charging, headlong and unarmed, after the table he had tossed, and was already thoroughly red in the face. "I'm twice the Jedi I was last time."
Oh, Dooku thought. Such a fragile little ego. Sidious will have to help him with that. But until then...
The grip of Skywalker's blade whistled through the air to meet his hand in perfect synchrony with a sweeping slash. "My powers have doubled since we last met."
"How lovely for you."
Dooku neatly sidestepped, cutting at the boy's leg. Yet Skywalker's blade met the cut as he passed, and he managed to sweep his blade behind his head to slap aside the casual thrust Dooku aimed at the back of his neck. But his clumsy charge had put him in Kenobi's path, so that the Jedi Master had to force roll over his partner's head, directly at Dooku's upraised blade. Kenobi drove a slash at the scarlet blade while he pivoted in the air, and again Dooku sidestepped so that now it was Kenobi in Skywalker's way.
"Really," Dooku said, "this is pathetic." Oh, they were certainly energetic enough. Leaping and whirling, raining blows almost at random, cutting chairs to pieces, and force hurling them in every conceivable direction, while Dooku continued in his gracefully methodical way to outmaneuver them so thoroughly it was all he could do to keep from laughing out loud.
It was a simple matter of countering their tactics, which were depressingly straightforward. Skywalker was the swift one, whooshing here and there like a spastic hawk bat, attempting a Jedi variant of Neek in the middle so they could come at him from both sides, while Kenobi came on in a measured Shi'icho cadence, deliberate as a lumber droid, moving step by step, cutting off the angles, clumsy but relentlessly dogged as he tried to chivvy Dooku into a corner. Whereas all Dooku need do was to slip from one side to another, and occasionally flip over a head here and there, so that he could fight each of them in turn, rather than both of them at the same time. He supposed that, in their own milieu, they might actually prove reasonably effective. It was clear that their style had been developed by fighting as a team against large numbers of opponents. They were not prepared to fight together against a single Force user, certainly not one of Dooku's power. He, on the other hand, had always fought alone. It was laughably easy to keep the Jedi tripping and stumbling and getting in each other's way. They didn't even comprehend how utterly he dominated the combat. Because they fought as they had been trained, by releasing all desire and allowing the Force to flow through them, they had no hope of countering Dooku's mastery of Sith techniques. They had learned nothing since he had bested them on Geonosis. They allowed the Force to direct them. Dooku directed the Force. He drew their strikes to his parries and drove his own riposte with thrusts of dark power that suddenly altered the Jedi's balance and disrupted their timing. He could have slaughtered both of them as casually as that creature Maul had destroyed the Vigos of the Black Sun. However, only one death was in his plan, and this dumb show was becoming tiresome, not to mention tiring. The dark power that served him went only so far, and he was, after all, not a young man. He leaned to a thrust at Kenobi's gut that the Jedi Master deflected with a rising parry, bringing them chest to chest, blades flaring, locked together a handbreadth from each other's throats. "Your moves are too slow, Kenobi. Too predictable. You'll have to do better." Kenobi's response to this friendly word was to regard him with a twinkle of gentle amusement in his eye. "Very well, then," the Jedi said, and shot straight upward over Dooku's head so fast it seemed he'd vanished. And in the space where Kenobi's chest had been was now only the blue lightning of Skywalker's blade driving straight for Dooku's heart. Only a desperate whirl to one side made what would have been a smoking hole in his chest into a line of scorch through his armor weave cloak. Dooku thought, "What?" He threw himself spinning up and away from the two Jedi to land on the situation table, disengaging for a moment to recover his composure. That had been entirely too close. But by the time his boots touched down, Kenobi was there to meet him, blade weaving through a defensive velocity so bewilderingly fast that Dooku dared not even try a strike. He threw a feint toward Kenobi's face, then dropped and spun in a reverse ankle sweep. But not only did Kenobi easily overleap this attack, Dooku nearly lost his own foot to a slash from Skywalker, who had again come out of nowhere and now carved through the table so that it collapsed under Dooku's weight and dumped the Sith Lord unceremoniously to the floor. This was not in the plan. Skywalker slammed his following strike down so hard that the shock of deflecting it buckled Dooku's elbows. Dooku threw himself into a back roll that brought him to his feet, and Kenobi's blade was there to meet his neck. Only a desperate whirling slash block, coupled with a wheel kick that caught Kenobi on the thigh, bought him enough time to leap away again, and when he touched down, Skywalker was already there. The first overhand chop of Skywalker's blade slid off Dooku's instinctive guard. The second bent Dooku's wrist. The third flash of blue forced Dooku's scarlet blade so far to the inside that his own lightsaber scorched his shoulder, and Dooku was forced to give ground. Dooku felt himself blanch. Where had this come from? Skywalker came on, mechanically inexorable, impossibly powerful, a destroyer droid with a lightsaber. each step a blow, and each blow a step. Dooku backed away as fast as he dared. Skywalker stayed right on top of him. Dooku's breath went short and hard. He no longer tried to block Skywalker's strikes, but only to guide them slanting away. He could not meet Skywalker's strength to strength. Not only did the boy wield tremendous reserves of Force energy, but his sheer physical power was astonishing. And only then did Dooku understand that he'd been suckered. Skywalker's Sheen ready stance had been a ruse, as had his Ataro gymnastics. The boy was a Djemso stylist, and as fine a one as Dooku had ever seen. His own elegant Makashi simply did not generate the kinetic power to meet Djemso head to head, especially not while also defending against the second attacker. It was time to alter his own tactics. He dropped low and spun into another reverse ankle sweep. The weakness of Djemso was its lack of mobility. That slapped Skywalker's boot sharply enough to throw the young Jedi off balance, giving Dooku the opportunity to leap away, only to find himself again facing the wheel of blue lightning that was Kenobi's blade. Dooku decided that the comedy had ended. Now it was time to kill. Kenobi's master had been Qui-Gon Jinn, Dooku's own Padawan. Dooku had fenced Qui-Gon thousands of times, and he knew every weakness of the Ataro form, with its ridiculous acrobatics. He drove a series of flashing thrusts toward Kenobi's legs to draw the Jedi Master into a flipping overhead leap so that Dooku could burn through his spine from kidneys to shoulder blades. And this image, this plan, was so clear in Dooku's mind that he almost failed to notice that Kenobi met every one of his thrusts without so much as moving his feet, staying perfectly centered, perfectly balanced, blade never moving a millimeter more than was necessary, deflecting without effort, riposting with flickering strikes and stabs swifter than the tongue of a Garolian ghost viper. And when Dooku felt Skywalker regain his feet and stride once more toward his back, he finally registered the source of that blinding defensive velocity Kenobi had used a moment ago. And only then, belatedly, did he understand that Kenobi's Ataro and Shiicho had been ploys as well. Kenobi had become a master of Sarisu. Dooku found himself having a sudden, unexpected, overpowering, and entirely distressing bad feeling about this. His farce had suddenly, inexplicably spun from humorous to deadly serious, and was tumbling rapidly toward terrifying. Realization burst through Dooku's consciousness like the blossoming fireballs of dying ships outside. This pair of Jedi fools had somehow managed to become entirely dangerous. These clowns might just possibly actually be able to beat him. No sense taking chances. Even his master would agree with that. Lord Sidious could come up with a new plan more easily than a new apprentice. He gathered the Force once more in a single indrawn breath that summoned power from throughout the universe. The slightest whip crack of that power, negligent as a flick of his wrist, sent Kenobi flying backward to crash hard against the wall. But Dooku didn't have time to enjoy it. Skywalker was all over him. The shining blue lightsaber whirled and spat, and every overhand chop crashed against Dooku's defense with the unstoppable power of a meteor strike. The Sith Lord spent lavishly of his reserve of the Force merely to meet these attacks without being cut in half. And Skywalker was getting stronger. Each parry cost Dooku more power than he'd used to throw Kenobi across the room. Each block aged him a decade. He decided he'd best revise his strategy once again. He no longer even tried to strike back. Force exhaustion began to close down his perceptions, drawing his consciousness back down to his physical form, trapping him within his own skull until he could barely even feel the contours of the room around him. He dimly sensed stairs at his back, stairs that led up to the entrance balcony. He retreated up them, using the higher ground for leverage. But Skywalker just kept on coming, tirelessly ferocious. That blue blade was everywhere, flashing and whirling faster and faster until Dooku saw the room through an electric haze. And now, Kenobi was back in the picture. With a shout of the Force, he shot like a torpedo up the stairs behind Skywalker, and Dooku decided that under these rather extreme circumstances, it was at least arguably permissible for a gentleman to cheat.
"Guards!"
he said to the pair of super battle droids that still stood at attention to either side of the entrance.
"Open fire!"
Instantly, the two droids sprang forward and lifted their hands. Energy hammered out from the heavy blasters built into their arms. Skywalker whirled, and his blade batted every blast back at the droids, whose mirror-polished carapace armor deflected the bolts again. Galvaned particle beams screeched through the room in blinding ricochets. Kenobi reached the top of the stairs, and a single slash of his lightsaber dismantled both droids. Before their pieces could even hit the floor, Dooku was in motion, landing a spinning sidestamp that folded Skywalker in half. He used his last burst of dark power to continue his spin into a blindingly fast wheel kick that brought his heel against the point of Kenobi's chin with a crack, like the report of a huge boar slug thrower, knocking the Jedi Master back down the stairs. Sounded like he'd broken his neck. Wouldn't that be lovely? There was no sense in taking chances, however. While Kenobi's bonelessly limp body was still tumbling toward the floor far below, Dooku sent a surge of energy through the Force. Kenobi's fall suddenly accelerated, like a missile, burning the last of its drives before impact. The Jedi Master struck the floor at a steep angle, skidded along it, and slammed into the wall so hard the hydrofoamed permacrete buckled and collapsed onto him. This, Dooku found exceedingly gratifying. Now, as for Skywalker. Which was as far as Dooku got, because by the time his attention returned to the younger Jedi, his vision was rather completely obstructed by the sole of a boot approaching his face with something resembling terminal velocity. The impact was a blast of white fire, and there was a second impact against his back. That was the balcony rail. And then the room turned upside down, and he fell toward the ceiling, but not really, of course. It only felt that way because he had flipped over the rail, and he was falling head first toward the floor, and neither his arms nor his legs were paying any attention to what he was trying to make them do. The Force seemed to be busy elsewhere, and really, the whole process was entirely mortifying. He was barely able to summon a last surge of dark power before what would have been a disabling impact. The Force cradled him, cushioning his fall and setting him on his feet. He dusted himself off and fixed a supercilious gaze on Skywalker, who now stood upon the balcony looking down at him. And Dooku couldn't hold the stare. He found this reversal of their original positions oddly unsettling. There was something troublingly appropriate about it. Seeing Skywalker standing where Dooku himself had stood only moments ago, it was as though he was trying to remember a dream he'd never actually had. He pushed this aside, drawing once more upon the certain knowledge of his personal invincibility to open a channel to the Force. Power flowed into him, and the weight of his years dropped away. He lifted his blade and beckoned. Skywalker leapt from the balcony. Even as the boy hurtled downward, Dooku felt a new twist in the currents of the Force between them, and he finally understood. He understood how Skywalker was getting stronger, why he no longer spoke, how he had become a machine of battle. He understood why Sidious had been so interested in him for so long. Skywalker was a natural. There was a thermonuclear furnace where his heart should be, and it was burning through the firewalls of his Jedi training. He held the Force in the clench of a white-hot fist. He was half Sith already, and he didn't even know it. This boy had the gift of fury. And even now, he was holding himself back. Even now, as he landed at Dooku's flank and rained blows upon the Sith Lord's defenses, even as he drove Dooku backward step after step, Dooku could feel how Skywalker kept his fury banked behind walls of will, walls that were hardened by some uncontrollable dread. Dread, Dooku surmised, of himself. Of what might happen if he should ever allow that furnace he used for a heart to go supercritical. Dooku slipped aside from an overhand chop and sprang backward.
I sense great fear in you. You are consumed by it. Hero with no fear indeed. You're a fraud, Skywalker. You are nothing but a posturing child.
He pointed his lightsaber at the young Jedi like an accusing finger.
Aren't you a little old to be afraid of the dark?
Skywalker leapt for him again, and this time Dooku met the boy's charge easily. They stood nearly toe-to-toe, blades flashing faster than the eye could see, but Skywalker had lost his edge. A simple taunt was all that had been required to shift the focus of his attention from winning the fight to controlling his own emotions. The angrier he got, the more afraid he became, and the fear fed his anger in turn. Like the proverbial Corellian multipede, now that he had started thinking about what he was doing, he could no longer walk. Dooku allowed himself to relax. He felt that spirit of playfulness coming over him again as he and Skywalker spun around each other in their lethal dance. Whatever fun was to be had, he should enjoy while he could. Then Sidious, for some reason, decided to intervene.
Don't fear what you're feeling, Anakin. Use it! He barked in Palpatine's voice. Call upon your fury. Focus it, and he cannot stand against you. Rage is your weapon. Strike now! Strike! Kill him!
Dooku thought blankly. Kill me?
He and Skywalker paused for one single final instant, blades locked together, staring at each other, past a sizzling cross of scarlet against blue. And in that instant, Dooku found himself wondering in bewildered astonishment if Sidious had suddenly lost his mind. Didn't he understand the advice he'd just given? Whose side was he on anyway? And through the cross of their blades, he saw in Skywalker's eyes the promise of hell. And he felt a sickening presentiment that he already knew the answer to that question. Treachery is the way of the Sith. Chapter 4, Jedi Trap. This is the death of Count Dooku. A starburst of clarity blossoms within Anakin Skywalker's mind when he says to himself, "Oh, I get it now," and discovers that the fear within his heart can be a weapon too. It is that simple, and that complex, and it is final. Dooku is dead already. The rest is mere detail. The play is still on. The comedy of lightsabers flashes and snaps and hisses. Dooku and Skywalker, a one-time-only command performance for an audience of one. Jedi and Sith and Sith and Jedi, spinning, whirling, crashing together, slashing and chopping, parrying, binding, slipping and whipping, and ripping the air around them with snarls of power. And all for nothing. Because a nuclear flame has consumed Anakin Skywalker's Jedi restraint, and fear becomes fury without effort, and fury is a blade that makes his lightsaber into a toy. The play goes on, but the suspense is over. It has become mere pantomime, as intricate and as meaningless as the space-time curves that guide galactic clusters through a measureless cosmos. Dooku's decades of combat experience are irrelevant. His mastery of swordplay is useless. His vast wealth, His political influence, impeccable breeding, immaculate manners, exquisite taste, all the pursuits and points of pride to which he has devoted so much of his time and attention over the long, long years of his life, are now chains hung upon his spirit, bending his neck before the axe. Even his knowledge of the Force has become a joke. It is this knowledge that shows him his death, makes him handle it, turn it this way and that in his mind, examine it in detail, like a black gemstone so cold it burns. Dooku's elegant farce has degenerated into pathetic melodrama, and not one shed tear will mark the passing of its hero. But for Anakin, in the fight there is only terror and rage. Only he stands between death and the two men he loves best in all the world, and he can no longer afford to hold anything back. That imaginary Dead Star dragon tries its best to freeze away his strength, to whisper to him that Dooku has beaten him before, that Dooku has all the power of the darkness, to remind him how Dooku took his hand, how Dooku could strike down even Obi-Wan himself seemingly without effort. And now Anakin is all alone, and he will never be a match for any Lord of the Sith. But Palpatine's words, "Rage is your weapon," have given Anakin permission to unseal the shielding around his furnace heart, and all his fears and all his doubts shrivel in its flame. When Count Dooku flies at him, blade flashing, Watto's fist cracks out from Anakin's childhood to knock the Sith Lord tumbling back. When with all the power that the dark side can draw from throughout the universe, Dooku hurls a jagged fragment of the Durasteel table, Shmi Skywalker's gentle murmur, "I knew you would come for me, Anakin," smashes it aside. His head has been filled with the smoke from his smothered heart for far too long. It has been the thunder that darkens his mind. On Arganar, on Jabim, in the Tusken camp on Tatooine, that smoke had clouded his mind, had blinded him and left him flailing in the dark, a mindless machine of slaughter. But here, now, within this ship, this microscopic cell of life in the infinite sterile desert of space, his firewalls have opened so that the terror and the rage are out there, in the fight, instead of in his head, and Anakin's mind is clear as a crystal bell. In that pristine clarity, there is only one thing he must do. Decide. So he does. He decides to win. He decides that Dooku should lose the same hand he took. Decision is reality here. His blade moves simultaneously with his will, and blue fire vaporizes black Corellian nano-silk and disintegrates flesh and shears bone, and away falls a Sith Lord's lightsaber hand, trailing smoke that tastes of charred meat and burned hair. The hand falls with a bar of scarlet blaze still extending from its spastic death grip, and Anakin's heart sings for the fall of that red blade. He reaches out, and the Force catches it for him. And then, Anakin takes Dooku's other hand as well. Dooku crumples to his knees, face blank, mouth slack, and his weapon whirs through the air to the victor's hand. And Anakin finds his vision of the future happening before his eyes, two blades at Count Dooku's throat. But here, now, the truth belies the dream. Both lightsabers are in his hands, and the one in his hand of flesh flares with the synthetic bloodshine of a Sith blade. Dooku, cringing, shrinking with dread, still finds some hope in his heart that he is wrong, that Palpatine has not betrayed him, that this has all been proceeding according to plan. Until he hears, "Good, Anakin, good, I knew you could do it," and registers this is Palpatine's voice, and feels within the darkest depths of all he is the approach of the words that are to come next. "Kill him," Palpatine says. "Kill him now." In Skywalker's eyes, he sees only flames.
Chancellor, please!
He gasps, desperate and helpless, his aristocratic demeanor invisible, his courage only a bitter memory. He is reduced to begging for his life, as so many of his victims have.
Please, you promised me immunity. We had a deal. Help me!
And his begging gains him a share of mercy equal to that which he has dispensed. A deal only if you released me, Palpatine replies, cold as intergalactic space. Not if you used me as bait to kill my friends. And he knows then that all has indeed been going according to plan. Sidious's plan, not his own. This had been a Jedi trap indeed, but Jedi were not the quarry. They were the bait. Anakin, Palpatine says quietly, finish him. Years of Jedi training make Anakin hesitate. He looks down upon Dooku and sees not a Lord of the Sith, but a beaten, broken, cringing old man. I shouldn't. But when Palpatine barks, do it! Now! Anakin realizes that this isn't actually an order, that it is, in fact, nothing more than what he's been waiting for his whole life. Permission. And Dooku, as he looks up into the eyes of Anakin Skywalker for the final time, Count Dooku knows that he has been deceived, not just today, but for many, many years. That he has never been the true apprentice. That he has never been the heir to the power of the Sith. He has been only a tool. His whole life, all his victories, all his struggles, all his heritage, all his principles and his sacrifices, everything he's done, everything he owns, everything he's been, all his dreams and grand vision for the future empire and the army of the Sith have been only a pathetic sham. Because all of them, all of him, add up only to this. He has existed only for this. This. To be the victim of Anakin Skywalker's first cold-blooded murder. First, but not, he knows, the last. Then the blades crossed at his throat, uncross like scissors. Snip. And all of him becomes nothing at all. Murderer and murdered each stared blindly, but only the murderer blinked. I did that. The severed head's stare was fixed on something beyond living sight. The desperate plea frozen in place on its lips echoed silence. The headless torso collapsed with a slowly fading sigh from the cauterized gape of its trachea, folding forward at the waist as though making obeisance before the power that had ripped away its life. The murderer blinked again. Who am I? Was he the slave boy on a desert planet, valued for his astonishing gift with machines? Was he the legendary pod racer, the only human to survive that deadly sport? Was he the unruly, high-spirited, trouble-prone student of a great Jedi master? The star pilot, the hero, the lover, the Jedi? Could he be all these things? Could he be any of them, and still have done what he has done? He was already discovering the answer at the same time that he finally realized that he needed to ask the question. The deck bucked as the cruiser absorbed a new barrage of torpedoes and turbo laser fire. Dooku's severed, staring head bounced along the deck and rolled away, and Anakin woke up. What? He'd been having a dream. He'd been flying and fighting again, and somehow in the dream he could do whatever he wanted. In the dream, whatever he did was the right thing to do simply because he wanted to do it. In the dream, there were no rules. There was only power. And the power was his. Now, he stood over a headless corpse that he couldn't bear to see, but he couldn't make himself look away, and he knew it hadn't been a dream at all, that he'd really done this. The blades were still in his hands, and the ocean of wrong he'd dived into had closed over his head, and he was drowning. The dead man's lightsaber tumbled from his loosening fingers. I couldn't stop myself. And before the words left his lips, he heard how hollow and obvious was the lie. You did well, Anakin. Palpatine's voice was warm as an arm around Anakin's shoulders. You did not only well, but right. He was too dangerous to leave alive. From the Chancellor, this sounded true. But when Anakin repeated it inside his head, he knew that Palpatine's truth would be one he could never make himself believe. A tremor that began between his shoulder blades threatened to expand into a full case of the shakes. He was an unarmed prisoner. That now, that simple, unbearable fact, that was truth. Though it burned him like his own lightsaber, truth was something he could hang on to. And somehow it made him feel a little better, a little stronger. He tried another truth. Not that he couldn't have stopped himself, but... I shouldn't have done that, he said. And now his voice came out solid and simple and final. Now he could look down at the corpse at his feet. He could look at the severed head. He could see them for what they were. A crime. He'd become a war criminal. Guilt hit him like a fist. He felt it, a punch to his heart that smacked breath from his lungs and buckled his knees. It hung on his shoulders like a yoke of collapsium, an invisible weight beyond his mortal strength, crushing his life. There were no words in him for this. All he could say was, it was wrong. And that was the sum of it, right there. It was wrong. Nonsense. Disarming him was nothing. He had powers beyond your imagination. Anakin shook his head. That doesn't matter. It's not the Jedi way. The ship shuddered again, and the lights went out. Have you never noticed that the Jedi way, Palpatine said, invisible now within the stark shadow of the General's chair, is not always the right way? Anakin looked toward the shadow. You don't understand. You're not a Jedi. You can't understand. Anakin, listen to me. How many lives have you just saved with the stroke of a lightsaber? Can you count them? But it wasn't wrong, Anakin. It may be not the Jedi way, but it was right. Perfectly natural. He took your hand. You wanted revenge. And your revenge was justice.
Revenge is never just. It can't be.
Don't be childish, Anakin. Revenge is the foundation of justice. Justice began with revenge, and revenge is still the only justice some beings can ever hope for. After all, this is hardly your first time, is it? Did Dooku deserve mercy more than did the Sand People who tortured your mother to death?
That was different.
In the Tusken camp, he had lost his mind. He had become a force of nature, indiscriminate, killing with no more thought or intention than a sand gale. The Tuskens had been killed, slaughtered, massacred, but that had been beyond his control, and now it seemed to him as if it had been done by someone else, like a story he had heard that had little to do with him at all. But Dooku had been murdered. By him. On purpose. Here in the General's quarters, he had looked into the eyes of a living being and coldly decided to end that life. He could have chosen the right way. He could have chosen the Jedi way. But instead, he stared down at Dooku's severed head. He could never unchoose this choice. He could never take it back. As Master Windu liked to say, there is no such thing as a second chance. And he wasn't even sure he wanted one. He couldn't let himself think about this, just as he didn't let himself think about the dead on Tatooine.
He put his hand to his eyes, trying to rub away the memory. You promised we would never talk about that again. And we won't. Just as we need never speak of what has happened here today. It was though the shadow itself spoke kindly. I have always kept your secrets, have I not? Yes. Yes, of course, Chancellor. But Anakin wanted to crawl away into a corner somewhere. He felt sure that if things would just stop for a while, an hour, a minute, he could pull himself together and find some way to keep moving forward. He had to keep moving forward. Moving forward was all he could do, especially when he couldn't stand to look back. The view wall behind the general's chair blossomed with looping ion spirals of inbound missiles. The shuddering of the ship built itself into a continuous quake, gathering magnitude with each hit. Anakin, my restraints, please, the shadow said. I'm afraid this ship is breaking up. I don't think we should be aboard when it does. In the Force, the field signatures of the magnetic locks on the Chancellor's shackles were as clear as text, saying, unlock me like this. A simple twist of Anakin's mind popped them open. The shadow grew a head, then shoulders, then underwent a sudden mitosis that left the general's chair standing behind and turned its other half into the Supreme Chancellor. Palpatine picked his way through the debris that littered the gloom-shrouded room, moving surprisingly quickly toward the stairs. Come along, Anakin. There is very little time. The view wall flared white with the missile's impacts, and one of them must have damaged the gravity generators. The ship seemed to heel over, forcing Palpatine to clutch desperately at the banister and sending Anakin skidding down a floor that had suddenly become a 45-degree ramp. He rolled hard into a pile of rubble, shattered permacrete, hydrofoamed to reduce weight. Obi-Wan! He sprang to his feet and waved away the debris that had buried the body of his friend. Obi-Wan lay entirely still, eyes closed, dust-caked blood matting his hair where his scalp had split. Bad as Obi-Wan looked, Anakin had stood over the bodies of too many friends on too many battlefields to be panicked by a little blood. One touch to Obi-Wan's throat confirmed the strength of his pulse, and that touch also let Anakin's force perception flow through the whole body of his friend. His breathing was strong and regular, and no bones were broken. This was a concussion, no more. Apparently, Obi-Wan's head was somewhat harder than the cruiser's interior walls. Leave him, Anakin. There is no time. Palpatine was half-hanging from the banister, both arms wrapped around a stanchion. This whole spire may be about to break free. Then we'll all be adrift together. Anakin glanced up at the Supreme Chancellor, and for that instant, he didn't like the man at all. But then he reminded himself that, brave as Palpatine was, his was the courage of conviction. The man was no soldier. He had no way of truly comprehending what he was asking Anakin to do. His fate, he said in case Palpatine had not understood, will be the same as ours. With Obi-Wan unconscious and Palpatine waiting above, with responsibility for the lives of his two closest friends squarely upon him, Anakin found that he had recovered his inner balance. Under pressure, in crisis, with no one to call upon for help, he could focus again. He had to. This was what he'd been born for. Saving people. The Force brought Obi-Wan's lightsaber to his hand, and he clipped it to his friend's belt, then hoisted the limp body over his shoulder and let the Force help him run lightly up the steeply canted floor to Palpatine's side. Impressive, Palpatine said. But then he cast a significant gaze up the staircase, which the vector of the artificial gravity had made into a vertical cliff. But what now? Before Anakin could answer, the erratic gravity swung like a pendulum. While they both clung to the railing, the room seemed to roll around them. All the broken chairs and table fragments and hunks of rubble slid toward the opposite side. And now, instead of a cliff, the staircase had become merely a corrugated stretch of floor. People say, Anakin nodded toward the door to the turbolift lobby, when the Force closes a hatch, it opens a viewport. After you.
Chapter 5. Grievous. The ARC-170s of Squad 7 had joined the V-Wings of Squad 4 in swarming the remaining Vulture fighters that had screened the immense Trade Federation flagship Invisible Hand. Clone pilots destroyed droid after droid with machine-like precision of their own. When the last of the Vultures had been converted to an expanding globe of superheated gas, the clone fighters peeled away, leaving Invisible Hand exposed to the full fire of Home Fleet Strike Group 5. Three Carrick-class light cruisers, Integrity, Indomitable, and Perseverance, in support of the Dreadnought, Mos Ramdar. Strike Group 5 had deployed in a triangle around Mos Ramdar, maintaining a higher orbit to pin Invisible Hand deep in Coruscant's gravity well. Turbo lasers blasted against Invisible Hand's faltering shields, but the flagship was giving as good as it got. Mos Ramdar had sustained so much damage already that it was little more than a target to absorb the Hand's return fire. And Indomitable was only a shell, most of its crew dead or evacuated, being run remotely by its commander and bridge crew. It swung unsteadily through the Hand's vector cone of escape routes to block any attempt to run up toward jump. As its shields finally failed, Invisible Hand began to roll, whirling like a bullet from a rifled slug thrower, trailing spiral jets of crystallizing gas that gushed from multiple hull ruptures. The rolling picked up speed, breaking the targeting locks of the ship's Republic adversaries. Unable to pound the same point again and again, their turbo lasers weren't powerful enough to breach the Hand's heavy armor directly. Their tracking points became rings that circled the ship, chewing gradually into the hull in tightening garrots of fire. On the Hand's bridge, overheated Nymoidians were strapped into their battle stations in full crash webbing. The air reeked of burning metal and the funk of reptilian stress hormones, and the erratically shifting gravity threatened to add a sharper stench. The faces of several of the bridge officers had already paled from healthy gray-green to nauseated pink. The sole being on the bridge who was not strapped into a chair stalked from one side to the other, floor-length cape draped over shoulders, angular as exposed bone. He ignored the jolts of impact and was unaffected by the swirl of unpredictable gravity as he paced the deck with metal-on-metal clanks. He walked on taloned creations of magnetized duranium, jointed to grab and crush like the feet of a Vractixan blood eagle. His expression could not be read. His face was a mask of bleached ceramic armor plast, stylized to evoke a humanoid skull. But the pure venom in the voice that hissed through the mask's electrosonic vocabulator made up for it.
"Either get the gravity generators calibrated, or disable them altogether,"
he snarled at a blue-scanned image of a cringing Nymoidian engineer.
"If this continues, you won't live long enough to be killed by the Republic."
But, sir, it's really up to the repair droids."
"And because they are droids, it's useless to threaten them. So I am threatening you. Understand?"
He turned away before the stammering engineer could summon a reply. The hand he extended toward the forward view screen wore a jointed gauntlet of armor plast fused to its bones of duranium alloy.
"Concentrate fire on Indomitable,"
he told the senior gunnery officer.
"All batteries at maximum. Fire for effect. Blast that hulk out of space, and we'll make a hyperspace jump through its wreckage."
"But the forward towers are already overloading, sir."
The officer's voice trembled on the edge of panic.
"They'll be at critical failure in less than a minute."
"Burn them out."
"But, sir, once they're gone..."
The rest of the senior gunnery officer's objection was lost in the wetly final crunching sound his face made under the impact of an armor-plast fist. That same fist opened, seized the collar of the officer's uniform, and yanked his corpse out of the chair, ripping the crash webbing free along with it. An expressionless skull face turned toward the junior gunnery officer.
"Congratulations on your promotion. take your post.
Yes, sir.
The newly promoted senior gunnery officer's hands shook so badly he could barely unbuckle his crash web, and his face had gone deathly pink.
Do you understand your orders? Do you have any objections? Very well, then.
General Grievous said with flat, impenetrable calm.
Carry on.
This is General Grievous. Durasteel. Ceramic armor-plast-plated duranium. Electro-drivers and crystal circuitry. Within them, the remnants of a living being. He doesn't breathe. He doesn't eat. He cannot laugh, and he does not cry. A lifetime ago, he was an organic sentient being. A lifetime ago, he had friends, a family, an occupation. A lifetime ago, he had things to love and things to fear. Now he has none of these. Instead, he has purpose. It's built into him. He is built to intimidate. The resemblance to a human skeleton melded with limbs, styled after the legendary Krath war droids, is entirely intentional. It is a face and form born of childhood's infinite nightmares. He is built to dominate. The ceramic armor-plast plates protecting limbs and torso and face can stop a burst from a starfighter's laser cannon. Those indestructible arms are 10 times stronger than human and move with the blurring speed of electronic reflexes. He is built to eradicate. Those human-sized hands have human-sized fingers for exactly one reason: to hold a lightsaber. 4 of them hang inside his cloak. He has never constructed a lightsaber. He has never bought one, nor has he recovered one that was lost. Each and all he has taken from the dead hands of Jedi he has killed. Personally. He has many, many such trophies. The 4 he carries with him are his particular favorites. 1 belonged to the interminable Kikrook, whom he had bested at Hypori. Another to the Virantesi Jedi Jamar, who'd fallen at Vandos. The other 2 had been created by Puroth and Nistamol, whom Grievous had slaughtered together on the flame grass plains of Tovarskil, so that each would know the other's death as well as their own. These are murders he recalls with so much pleasure that touching these souvenirs with his hands of armor plast and durasteel brings him something resembling joy. But only resembling. He remembers joy. He remembers anger and frustration. He remembers grief and sorrow. He doesn't actually feel any of them. Not anymore. He's not designed for it. White-hot sparks zipped and crackled through the smoke that billowed across the turbolift lobby. Over Anakin's shoulder, the unconscious Jedi Master wheezed faintly. Beside his other shoulder, Palpatine coughed harshly into the sleeve of his robe, held over his face for protection from caustic combustion products of the overloading circuitry. R2! Anakin shook his comlink sharply. The blasted thing had been on the blink ever since Obi-Wan had stepped on it during one of the turbolift fights. R2, do you copy? I need you to activate... The smoke was so thick he could barely make out the numerals on the code plate. Elevator 3224. 3224, do you copy? The comlink emitted a fading fweep that might have been an acknowledgement, and the door slid apart. But before Anakin could carry Obi-Wan through, the turbolift pod shot upward and the artificial gravity vector shifted again, throwing him and his partner into a heap next to Palpatine in the lobby's opposite corner. Palpatine was struggling to rise, still coughing, sounding weak. Anakin let the Force lift Obi-Wan back to his shoulder, then picked himself up. "Perhaps you should stay down, sir," he said to the Chancellor. "The gravity swings are getting worse." Palpatine nodded. "But Anakin..." Anakin looked up. The turbolift door still stood open.
Wait here, sir. He opened himself more fully to the Force, and in his mind placed himself in Obi-Wan balanced on the edge of the open doorway above. Holding this image, he leapt, and the Force made his intention into reality. His leap carried him and the unconscious Jedi Master precisely to the rim. The altered gravitic vector had made the turbolift shaft into a horizontal hallway of unlit durasteel, laser straight, shrinking into darkness. Anakin was familiar with the specs for Trade Federation command cruisers. The angled conning spire was some 300 meters long. As it stood, they could walk it in 2 or 3 minutes. But if the wrong gravity shift were to catch them inside the shaft... He shook his head, grimly calculating the odds. We'll have to be fast. He glanced back over his shoulder, down at Palpatine, who still huddled below. Are you all right, Chancellor? Are you well enough to run? The Supreme Chancellor finally rose, patting his robes in a futile attempt to dust them off. I haven't run since I was a boy on Naboo. It's never too late to start getting into shape. Anakin reached through the Force to give Palpatine a little help in clambering up to the open doorway. There are light shuttles on the hangar deck. We can be there in 5 minutes. Once Palpatine was safely within the shaft hall, Anakin said, "Follow me," and turned to go, but the Chancellor stopped him with a hand on his arm. "Anakin, wait. We need to get to the bridge." Through an entire ship full of combat droids? Not likely. The hangar deck's right below. Well, beside us now. It's our best chance. But the bridge. Grievous is there. Now Anakin did stop. Grievous. The most prolific slaughterer of Jedi since Dirge. In all the excitement, Anakin had entirely forgotten that the bio-droid general was aboard. "You've defeated Dooku," Palpatine said. "Capture Grievous, and you will have dealt a wound from which the Separatists may never recover." Anakin thought blankly. I could do it. He had dreamed of capturing Grievous ever since Moonalinst, and now the general was close. So close, Anakin could practically smell him. And Anakin had never felt so powerful. The Force was with him today in many ways more potent than he had ever experienced. Think of it, Anakin. Palpatine stood close by his shoulder, opposite to Obi-Wan, so close he needed only to whisper. You have destroyed their political head. Take their military commander, and you will have practically won the war, single-handed. Who else could do that, Anakin? Yoda? Mace Windu? They couldn't even capture Dooku. Who would have a chance against Grievous if not Anakin Skywalker? The Jedi have never faced a crisis like the Clone Wars, but also, they have never had a hero like you. You can save them. You can save everyone. Anakin jerked, startled. He turned a sharp glance toward Palpatine, the way he had said that, like a voice out of his dreams. That's... Anakin tried to laugh. It came out a little shaky. That's not what Obi-Wan keeps telling me. Forget Obi-Wan, Palpatine said. He has no idea how powerful you truly are. Use your power, Anakin. Save the Republic. Anakin could see it, vivid as a holonet feature. Arriving at the Senate with Grievous in electro bonds, standing modestly aside as Palpatine announced the end of the war. Returning to the temple, to the council chamber, where finally, after all this time, there would be a chair waiting just for him. They could hardly refuse him mastership now, after he had won the war for them. But then, Obi-Wan shifted on his shoulder, moaning faintly, and Anakin snapped back to reality. No, he said. Sorry, Chancellor. My orders are clear. This is a rescue mission. Your safety is my only priority. I will never be safe while Grievous lives, Palpatine countered. Master Kenobi will recover at any moment. Leave him here with me. He can see me safely to the hangar deck. Go for the general. I would like to, sir. But I can make it an order, Anakin. With respect, sir. No, You can't. My orders come from the Jedi Council, and the Council's orders come from the Senate. You have no direct authority.
The Chancellor's face darkened.
That may change.
Anakin nodded. And perhaps it should, sir. But until it does, we'll do things my way. Let's go.
Sir?
The thin voice of the comm officer interrupted Grievous's pacing.
We are being hailed by Integrity, sir. They propose a ceasefire.
Dark yellow eyes squinted through the skull mask at the tactical displays. A pause in the combat would allow Invisible Hand's turbolaser batteries to cool and give the engineers a chance to get the gravity generators under control.
Acknowledge receipt of transmission. Stand by to ceasefire.
Standing by, sir.
The gunnery officer was still shaking.
Ceasefire.
The lances of energy that had joined the Hand to the home fleet strike force melted away.
Further transmission, sir. It's Integrity's commander.
Grievous nodded.
Initiate.
A ghostly image built itself above the bridge's ship-to-ship hologenerator. A young human male of distinctly average height and build, wearing the uniform of a lieutenant commander. The only thing distinctive about his otherwise rather bland features was the calm confidence in his eyes.
General Grievous, the young man said briskly, I am Lieutenant Commander Lorth Nida of RSS Integrity. At my request, my superiors have consented to offer you the chance to surrender your ship, sir.
Surrender?
Grievous's vocabulator produced a very credible reproduction of a snort.
Preposterous.
Please give this offer careful deliberation, General, as it will not be repeated. Consider the lives of your crew.
Grievous cast an icy glance around his bridge full of craven Nymoidians.
Why should I?
The young man did not look surprised, though he did show a trace of sadness.
Is this your reply, then?
Not at all.
Grievous drew himself up. By straightening the angles of his levered joints, he could add half a meter to his already imposing height.
I have a counteroffer. Maintain your ceasefire. Move that Hulk Indomitable out of my way, and withdraw to a minimum range of 50 kilometers until this ship achieves hyperspace jump.
If I may use your word, sir, preposterous.
Tell these superiors of yours that if my demands are not met within 10 minutes, I will personally disembowel Supreme Chancellor Palpatine live on the holonet. Am I understood?
The young officer took this without a blink.
Ah, the Chancellor is aboard your ship, then?
He is. Your pathetic Jedi so-called heroes have failed. They are dead, and Palpatine remains in my hands.
Ah, the young officer repeated. So you will, of course, allow me to speak with him, to, reassure my superiors that you are not simply, well, to put it charitably, bluffing.
I would not lower myself to lie to the likes of you.
Grievous turned to the comm officer.
Patch in, Count Dooku.
The comm officer stroked his screen, then shook his head.
He is not responding, sir.
Grievous shook his head disgustedly.
Just show the Chancellor, then. Bring up my quarters on the security screen.
The security officer stroked his own screen and made a choking sound.
Sir?
What are you waiting for? Bring it up.
He'd gone as pink as the gunner.
Perhaps you should have a look first, sir.
The plain urgency in his tone brought Grievous to his side without another word. The general bent over his screen that showed the view inside his quarters and found himself looking at jumbled piles of energy-sheared wreckage surrounding the empty shape of the general's chair. And that there, that looked like it could have been a body draped in a cape of armor weave. Grievous turned back toward the intership holocom.
The Chancellor is indisposed.
Ah, I see.
Grievous suspected that the young officer saw entirely too well.
I assure you, the...
I do not require your assurance, General. You have the same amount of time you offered us. 10 minutes from now, I will have either your surrender or confirmation that Supreme Chancellor Palpatine is alive, unharmed, and present, or Invisible Hand will be destroyed.
Wait! You can't simply...
10 minutes, General. Nita out.
When Grievous turned to the bridge security officer, his mask was blankly expressionless as ever. But he made up for it with the open murder in his voice.
Dooku is dead and the Jedi are loose. They have the Chancellor. Find them and bring them to me.
His armor-plast fingers curled into a fist that crashed down on the security console so hard the entire thing collapsed into a sparking, smoking ruin.
Find them!
Chapter 6. Rescue.
Anakin counted paces as he trotted along the turbolift shaft, Obi-Wan over his shoulder and Palpatine at his side. He'd reached 102, only a third of the way along the conning spire, when he felt the gravity begin to shift. Exactly the wrong way. Changing the rest of the long, long shaft from ahead to down. He put out his free arm to stop the Chancellor. This is a problem. Find something to hang on to while I get us out of here. One of the turbo lift doors was nearby, seemingly lying on its side. Anakin's lightsaber found his hand, and its sizzling blade burned open the door controls. But before he could even move aside the sparking wires, the gravitic vector lurched toward vertical, and he fell, skidding along the wall, free hand grabbing desperately at a loop of cable, catching it, hanging from it. And the turbo lift doors opened, inviting, safe, and mockingly out of reach, a meter above his outstretched arm. And his other arm was the only thing holding Obi-Wan above a 200-meter drop, down which his lightsaber's hand grip now clanked and clattered, fading toward infinity. For half a second, Anakin was actually glad Obi-Wan was unconscious, because he wasn't in the mood for another lecture about hanging on to his lightsaber right now. And that thought blew away and vanished because something had grabbed onto his leg. He looked down. It was Palpatine. The Chancellor hugged Anakin's ankle with improbable strength, peering fearfully into the darkness below.
Anakin, do something! You have to do something!
I'm open to suggestions, he thought, but he said, don't panic. Just hang on.
I don't think I can.
The Chancellor turned his anguished face upward imploringly.
Anakin, I'm slipping. Give me your hand. You have to give me your hand.
And drop Obi-Wan? Anakin thought. Not in this millennium.
Don't panic,
Anakin repeated. The Chancellor had clearly lost his head. I can get us out of this. He wished he were as confident as he sounded. He had been counting on the artificial gravity to continue to swing until the shaft turned back into a hallway, but instead, it seemed to have stopped where it was. This would be an especially lousy time for the generators to start working right. He fixed a measuring glance on the open lift doorway above. Perhaps the Force could give him enough of a boost to carry all three of them to safety. But that was an exceedingly large perhaps. Obi-Wan, old buddy, old pal, he thought. This would be a really good time to wake up. Obi-Wan Kenobi opened his eyes to find himself staring at what he strongly suspected was Anakin's butt. It looked like Anakin's butt. Well, his pants, anyway. Though it was thoroughly impossible for Obi-Wan to be certain, since he had never before had occasion to examine Anakin's butt upside down, which it currently appeared to be, nor from this rather uncomfortably close range. And how he might have arrived at this angle and this range was entirely baffling. He said, have I missed something?
Hang on, he heard Anakin say. We're in a bit of a situation here.
So it was Anakin's butt, after all. He supposed he might take a modicum of comfort from that. Looking up, he discovered Anakin's legs and his boots and a somewhat astonishing close-up view of the Supreme Chancellor, as Palpatine seemingly balanced overhead, supported only by a white-knuckled death grip on Anakin's ankle. Oh, hello, Chancellor, he said mildly.
Are you well?
The Chancellor cast a distressed glance over his shoulder.
I hope so.
Obi-Wan followed the Chancellor's gaze. Above Palpatine rose a long, long vertical shaft, which was when he finally realized that he wasn't looking up at all. This must be what Anakin had meant by a bit of a situation.
Ah,
Obi-Wan said. At least he was finally coming to understand where he stood. Well, lay, hung, whatever.
And Count Dooku?
Anakin said, dead.
Pity,
Obi-Wan sighed.
Alive, he might have been a help to us.
Obi-Wan, not in this particular situation, granted, but nonetheless.
Can we discuss this later? The ship's breaking apart.
Ah. A familiar electrosonic furuweep came thinly through someone's comlink.
Was that R2? What does he want?
I asked him to activate the elevator, Anakin said. From the distant darkness above came a clank and a shirr and a clonk, all of which evoked in Obi-Wan's still somewhat addled brain the image of turbolift brakes unlocking. The accuracy of his imagination was swiftly confirmed by a sudden downdraft that smelled strongly of burning oil, followed closely by the bottom of a turbolift pod hurtling down the shaft like a meteorite down a well.
Obi-Wan said, "Oh."
It seemed like a good idea at the time.
No need to get defensive.
R2! Anakin shouted. Shut it down!
No time for that, Obi-Wan said. Jump.
Jump? Palpatine asked with a shaky laugh. Don't you mean fall?
Actually, yes.
Anakin?
Anakin let go. They fell and fell. The sides of the turbo shaft blurred. And fell some more, until the gravitic vector finally eased a couple of degrees, and they found themselves sliding along the side of the shaft, which was quickly turning into the bottom of the shaft, and the lift pod was still shrieking toward them faster than they could possibly run, until Anakin finally got the comlink working and shouted, R2! Open the doors! All of them! All floors! One door opened just as they skidded onto it, and all three of them tumbled through. They landed in a heap on a turbolift lobby's opposite wall as the pod shot past overhead. They gradually managed to untangle themselves.
Ah, all of your rescue so, Palpatine gasped breathlessly. Entertaining?
Obi-Wan gave Anakin a thoughtful frown. Anakin returned it with a shrug.
Actually, now that you mentioned it, Obi-Wan said.
Yes.
Anakin stared into the tangled masses of wreckage that littered the hangar bay, trying to pick out anything that still even resembled a ship. This place looked as if it had taken a direct hit. Wind howled against his back through the open hatchway, where Obi-Wan stood with Chancellor Palpatine, and scraps of debris whirled into the air, blown toward space through gaps in the scorched and buckled blast doors.
None of these ships will get us anywhere, Palpatine shouted above the wind, and Anakin had to agree. What are we going to do?
Anakin shook his head. He didn't know, and the Force wasn't offering any clues.
Obi-Wan?
How should I know? Obi-Wan said, bracing himself in the doorway, robe whipping in the wind.
You're the hero. I'm just a master.
Past Obi-Wan's shoulder, Anakin saw a cadre of super battle droids marching around a corner into the corridor.
Master! Behind you!
Obi-Wan whirled, lightsaber flaring to meet a barrage of blaster bolts.
Protect the Chancellor!
And let you have all the fun? Anakin thought, then pulled the Chancellor into the hangar bay and pressed him against the wall beside the hatch.
Stay under cover until we handle the droids.
He was about to jump out beside Obi-Wan when he remembered that he had dropped his lightsaber down the turbo shaft. Fighting super battle droids without it would be a bit tricky. Not to mention that Obi-Wan would never let him hear the end of it.
Droids are not our only problem, Palpatine pointed across the hangar bay. Look!
On the far side of the bay, masses of wreckage were shifting, sliding toward the wall against which Anakin and Palpatine stood. Then debris closer to them began to slide, followed by piles closer still. An invisible wavefront was passing through the hangar bay.
Behind it, the gravitic vector was rotated a full 90 degrees. Gravity shear. Anakin's jaw clenched. This just kept getting better and better. He unspooled the length of his utility belt safety cable and passed the end to Palpatine. The wind made it sing. Cinch this around your waist. Things are about to get a little wild. What's happening? The gravity generators have desynchronized. They'll tear the ship apart. Anakin grabbed one of the zero-G handles beside the hatchway, then leaned out into the firestorm of blaster bolts and saber flares and touched Obi-Wan's shoulder. Time to go! What? Explanation was obviated as the sheer front moved past them and the wall became the floor. Anakin grabbed the back of Obi-Wan's collar, but not to save him from falling. The torque of the gravity shear had buckled the blast doors, which were now overhead, and the hurricane of escaping air blasting from the corridor shaft blew the Jedi Master up through the hatch. Anakin dragged him out of the gale just as pieces of super battle droids began hurtling upward into the hangar bay like misfiring torpedoes. Some of the super battle droids were still intact enough to open fire as they flew past. "Hang on to my belt!" Obi-Wan shouted and spun his lightsaber through an intricate flurry to deflect bolt after bolt. Anakin could do nothing but hold him braced against the gale. His grip on the zero-G handle was the only thing keeping him and Obi-Wan from being blown out into space and taking Palpatine with them. "This is not the best plan we've ever had!" he shouted. "This was a plan?" Palpatine sounded appalled. "We'll make our way forward," Obi-Wan shouted. "There are only droids back here. Once we hit live crew areas, there will be escape pods." "Only droids back here" echoed inside Anakin's head. "Obi-Wan, wait," he cried. "R2 still here somewhere. We can't leave him." "He's probably been destroyed or blown into space." Obi-Wan deflected blaster bursts from the last two gale-blown droids. They tumbled up to the gap in the blast doors and vanished into the infinite void. Obi-Wan put away his lightsaber and fought his way back to a grip beside Anakin's. "We can't afford the time to search for him. I'm sorry, Anakin. I know how much he meant to you." Anakin desperately fished out his comlink. "R2! R2, come in!" He shook it and shook it again. R2 couldn't have been destroyed. He just couldn't. "R2! Do you copy? Where are you?" "Anakin." Obi-Wan's hand was on his arm, and the Jedi Master leaned so close that his low tone could be heard over the rising gale. "We must go. Being a Jedi means allowing things, even things we love, to pass out of our lives." Anakin shook the comlink again. "R2! He couldn't just leave him. He couldn't. And he didn't exactly have an explanation. Not one he could ever give Obi-Wan anyway. There are so few things a Jedi ever owns. Even his lightsaber is less a possession than an expression of his identity. To be a Jedi is to renounce possessions. And Anakin had tried so hard, tried for so long to do just that. Even on their wedding day, Anakin had had no devotion gift for his new wife. He didn't actually own anything. But love will find a way. He had brought something like a gift to her apartments in Theed. Still a little shy with her, still overwhelmed by finding the feelings in her he'd felt so long himself, not knowing quite how to give her a gift which wasn't really a gift, nor was it his to give. Without anything of his own to give except his love, all he could bring her was a friend. "I didn't have many friends when I was a kid," he'd told her, "so I built one." And C-3PO had shuffled in behind him, gleaming as though he'd been plated with solid gold. Padme had lit up, her eyes gleaming, but she had at first tried to protest. "I can't accept him," she'd said. "I know how much he means to you." Anakin had only laughed. What use is a protocol droid to a Jedi, even one as upgraded as 3PO? Anakin had packed his creation with so many extra circuits and sub-programs and heuristic algorithms that the droid was practically human. "I'm not giving him to you," he told her. "He's not even really mine to give. When I built him, I was a slave, and everything I did belonged to Watto. Kleek Lars bought him along with my mother. Owen gave him back to me. But I'm a Jedi.
I have renounced possessions. I guess that means he's free now. What I'm really doing is asking you to look after him for me.
Look after him?
Yes. Maybe even give him a job.
He's a little fussy,
he'd admitted. And maybe I shouldn't have given him quite so much self-consciousness. He's a worrier. But he's very smart, and he might be a real help to a big-time diplomat, like, say, a senator from Naboo.
Padme then had extended her hand and graciously invited C-3PO to join her staff. Because on Naboo, high-functioning droids were respected as thinking beings, and 3PO had been so flustered at being treated like a sentient creature that he'd been barely able to speak, beyond muttering something about hoping he might make himself useful, because, after all, he was fluent in over 6 million forms of communication. Then she had turned to Anakin and laid her soft, soft hand along his jawline to draw him down to kiss her. And that was all he had needed, all he had hoped for. He would give her everything he had, everything he was. And there had come another day, 2 years later, a day that had meant nearly as much to him as the day they had wed. The day he had finally passed his trials. The day he had become a Jedi Knight. As soon as circumstances allowed, he had slipped away, on his own now, no master over his shoulder, no one to monitor his comings and his goings, and so he could take himself to the vast Coruscant complex at 500 Republica, where Naboo's senior senator kept her spacious apartments. And he had then, finally, 2 years late, a devotion gift for her. He had then one thing that he truly owned, that he had earned, that he was not required to renounce. One gift he could give her to celebrate their love. The culmination of the ceremony of Jedi Knighthood is the severing of the new Jedi Knight's Padawan braid. And it was this that he laid into Padme's trembling hand. One long thin braid of his glossy hair. Such a little thing, of no value at all. Such a little thing that meant the galaxy to him. And she had kissed him then, and laid her soft cheek against his jaw, and she had whispered in his ear that she had something for him as well. Out from her closet had whirred R2-D2. Of course Anakin knew him. He had known him for years. The little droid was a decorated war hero himself, having saved Padme's life back when she had been Queen of Naboo, not to mention helping the 9-year-old Anakin destroy the Trade Federation's droid control ship, breaking the blockade and saving the planet. The Royal Engineers of Naboo's aftermarket wizardry made their modified R-units the most sought after in the galaxy. He tried to protest, but she had silenced him with a soft finger against his lips and a gentle smile and a whisper of, "After all, what does a politician need with an astromech?" "But I'm a Jedi. That's why I'm not giving him to you," she said with a smile. "I'm asking you to look after him. He's not really a gift. He's a friend." All this flashed through Anakin's mind in the stretching second before his comlink finally crackled to life with a familiar fwee-wee-woo, and his heart unclenched.
"R2, where are you? Come on! We have to get out of here!"
High above, on the wall that was supposed to be the floor, the lid of a battered Durasteel storage locker shifted, pushed aside by a dome of silver and blue. The lid swung fully open, and R2-D2 righted himself, deployed its booster rockets, and floated out from the locker, heading for the far exit. Anakin gave Obi-Wan a fierce grin. Let someone he loves pass out of his life? Not likely.
"What are we waiting for?" he said. "Let's go!"
From Invisible Hand's bridge, the ship's spin made the vast curve of Coruscant's horizon appear to orbit the ship in a dizzying whirl. Each rotation also brought a view of the lazily tumbling wreckage of the conning spire, ripped from the ship and cast out of orbit by centripetal force, as it made the long burning fall toward the planetary city's surface. General Grievous watched them both, while his droid circuitry ticked off the seconds remaining in the life of his ship. He had no fear for his own life. His specially designed escape module was pre-programmed to take him directly to a ship already primed for jump. Mere seconds after he sealed himself and the Chancellor within the module's heavily armored hull, they would be taken aboard the fleeing ship,
which would then make a series of randomized micro-jumps to prevent being tracked before entering the final jump to the secret base on Utapau. But he was not willing to go without the Chancellor. This operation had cost the Confederacy dearly in ships and personnel. To leave empty-handed would be an even graver cost in prestige. Winning this war was more than half a matter of propaganda. Much of the weakness of the Republic grew from its citizens' superstitious dread of the Separatists' seemingly inevitable victory. A dread cultivated and nourished by the CIS shadow feed that poisoned government propaganda on the HoloNet. The common masses of the Republic believed that the Republic was losing. To see the legendary Grievous himself beaten back and fleeing a battle would give them hope that the war might be won. And hope was simply not to be allowed. His built-in comlink buzzed in his left ear. He touched the sensor implant in the jaw of his mask.
Yes. The Jedi almost certainly escaped the conning spire, sir.
The voice was that of one of his precious custom-built IG-100 series Magna Guards. Prototype self-motivating humaniform combat droids designed, programmed, and armed specifically to fight Jedi.
We recovered a lightsaber from the base of the turbolift shaft before the spire tore free.
Copy that. Stand by for instructions.
One long stride put Grievous next to the Nymordian security officer.
Have you located them, or are you about to die?
The security officer's trembling finger pointed to a schematic of Invisible Hand's hangar deck, where a bright blip slid slowly through Bay 1.
What is that?
It's the Chancellor's beacon, sir.
What? The Jedi never deactivated it. Why not?
I can't actually...
Idiots.
He looked down at the cringing security officer, considering killing the fool just for taking so long to figure this out. The Nymoidian might as well have read Grievous' thought spelled out across his bone-colored mask.
If you hadn't, please recall my security console has been destroyed, so I have been forced to reroute.
Silence.
Grievous gave a mental shrug. The fool would be dead or captured soon enough regardless.
Order all combat droids to terminate their search algorithms and converge on the bridge. Wait, strike that. Leave the battle droids, useless things,
he muttered into his mask.
A greater danger to us than to Jedi. Super battle droids and droidicas only, do you understand? We will take no chances.
As the security officer turned to his screens, Grievous again touched the sensor implant along the jaw of his mask.
IG-101. Sir, assemble a team of super battle droids and droidicas, as many as you can gather, and report to the hangar deck. I'll give you the exact coordinates as soon as they are available.
Yes, sir.
You will find at least one Jedi, possibly two, in the company of Chancellor Palpatine, imprisoned in a ray shield. They are to be considered extremely dangerous. Disarm them and deliver them to the bridge.
If they are so dangerous, perhaps we should execute them on the spot.
No. My orders are clear that the Chancellor is not to be harmed. And the Jedi...
The General's right hand slipped beneath his cape to stroke the array of lightsabers clipped there.
The Jedi, I will execute personally.
A sheet of shimmering energy suddenly flared in front of them, blocking the corridor on the far side of the intersection they were trotting across. And Obi-Wan stopped so short that Anakin almost slammed into his back. He reached over and caught Palpatine by the arm.
Careful, sir, he said low. Better not touch it till we know what it is.
Obi-Wan unclipped his lightsaber, activated it, and cautiously extended its tip to touch the energy field. An explosive burst of power flared sparks and streaks in all directions, nearly knocking the weapon from his hands.
Ray shield, he said, more to himself than to the others. We'll have to find a way around.
But even as he spoke, another sheet shimmered into existence across the mouth of the corridor they'd just left, and two more sizzled into place to seal the corridors to either side. They were boxed in, caught. Obi-Wan stood there for a second or two, blinking, then looked at Anakin and shook his head in disbelief.
I thought we were smarter than this. Apparently not. The oldest trap in the book, and we walked right into it.
Anakin felt as embarrassed as Obi-Wan looked.
Well, you walked right into it. I was just trying to keep up.
Oh, so now this is my fault.
Anakin gave him a slightly wicked smile. Hey, you're the master. I'm just a hero.
Joke some other time, Obi-Wan muttered. It's the dark side, the shadow on the Force. Our instincts still can't be trusted. Don't you feel it?
The dark side was the last thing Anakin wanted to think about right now.
Or, you know, it could be that knock on the head, he offered.
Obi-Wan didn't even smile.
No, all our choices keep going awry. How could they even locate us so precisely?
Something is definitely wrong here. Dooku's death should have lifted the shadow.
If you've a taste for mysteries, Master Kenobi, Palpatine interrupted pointedly, perhaps you could solve the mystery of how we're going to escape.
Obi-Wan nodded, scowling darkly at the ray shield box, as though seeing it for the first time. After a moment, he took out his lightsaber again, ignited it, and sank its tip into the deck at his feet. The blade burned through the durasteel plate almost without resistance, and then flared and bucked and spat lightning as it hit a shield in place in a gap below the plate and almost threw Obi-Wan into the annihilating energy of the ray shield behind him.
No doubt in the ceiling as well. He looked at the others and sighed.
Ideas?
Perhaps, Palpatine said thoughtfully, as though the idea had only just occurred to him.
We should simply surrender to General Grievous. With the death of Count Dooku, I'm sure that the two of you can...
He cast a significant sidelong glance at Anakin.
Negotiate our release.
He's persistent, I'll give him that, Anakin thought. He caught himself smiling as he recalled discussing negotiation with Padme on Naboo before the war. He came back to the present when he realized that undertaking aggressive negotiations could prove embarrassing under his current lightsaber-challenged circumstances.
I say, he put in slowly, patience.
Patience?
Obi-Wan lifted an eyebrow. That's a plan? You know what Master Yoda says.
Patience you must have until the mud settles and the water becomes clear.
So, let's wait.
Obi-Wan looked skeptical.
Wait.
For the security patrol. A couple of droids will be along in a moment or two. They'll have to drop the ray shield to take us into custody.
And then?
Anakin shrugged cheerfully.
And then we'll wipe them out.
Brilliant as usual, Obi-Wan said dryly.
What if they turn out to be destroyer droids? Or something worse?
Oh, come on, Master. Worse than the destroyers?
Besides, security patrols are always those skinny, useless little battle droids.
At that moment, four of those skinny, useless battle droids came marching toward them, one along each corridor, clanking along with blaster rifles leveled. One of them triggered one of its pre-programmed security commands.
Hand over your weapons.
The other three chimed in with enthusiastic barks of
Roger, Roger,
and a round of spastic head bobbing.
See? Anakin said. No problem.
Before Obi-Wan could reply, concealed doors in the corridor walls zipped suddenly aside. Through them rolled the massive bronzium wheels of destroyer droids, two into each corridor. The eight destroyers unrolled themselves behind the battle droids, haloed by sparkling energy shields, twin blaster cannons targeting the two Jedi's chests. Obi-Wan sighed.
You were saying?
Okay, fine. It's the dark side or something. Anakin rolled his eyes.
I guess you're off the hook for the ray shield trap.
Through those same doorways marched 16 super battle droids to back up the destroyers, their arm cannons raised to fire over the destroyer's shields. Behind the super battle droids came two droids of a type Anakin had never seen. He had an idea what they were, though, and he was not happy about it. Obi-Wan scowled at them as they approached.
You're the expert, Anakin. What are those things?
Remember what you were saying about worse than destroyers? Anakin said grimly. I think we're looking at them. They walked side by side, their gait easy and straightforward, almost as smooth as a human's. In fact, they could have been human,
Humans, who were 2 meters tall and made out of metal. They wore long, swirling cloaks that had once been white, but now were stained with smoke and what Anakin strongly suspected was blood. They walked with the cloaks thrown back over one shoulder to clear their left arms, where they held some unfamiliar staff-like weapon about 2 meters long. Something like the force pike of a Senate guard, but shorter, and with an odd-looking discharge blade at each end. They walked like they were made to fight, and they had clearly seen some battle. The chest plate of one bore a round, shallow crater surrounded by a corona of scorch, a direct blaster hit that hadn't come close to penetrating. The other bore a scar from its cranial dome down through one dead photoreceptor, a scar that looked like it might have come from a lightsaber. This droid looked like it had fought a Jedi and survived. The Jedi, he guessed, hadn't. These two droids threaded between the super battle droids and destroyers and casually shoved aside one battle droid hard enough that it slammed into the wall and collapsed into a sparking heap of metal. The one with the damaged photoreceptor pointed its staff at them, and the ray shields around them dropped.
He said, "Hand over your weapons, Jedi."
This definitely wasn't a pre-programmed security command. Anakin said softly, "I saw an intel report on this. I think those are Grievous's personal bodyguard droids, prototypes built to his specifications." He looked from Obi-Wan to Palpatine and back again. "To fight Jedi." "Ah," Obi-Wan said. "Then under the circumstances, I suppose we need a plan B." Anakin nodded at Palpatine. "The Chancellor's idea is sounding pretty good right now." Obi-Wan nodded thoughtfully. When the Jedi Master turned away to offer his lightsaber to the bodyguard droid, Anakin leaned close to the Supreme Chancellor and murmured, "So you get your way after all." Palpatine answered with a slight, unreadable smile, "I frequently do." As super battle droids came forward with electrobinders for their wrists and a restraining bolt for R2-D2, Obi-Wan cast one frowning look back over his shoulder. "Oh, Anakin," he said with a sort of quiet, pained resignation that would be recognized instantly by any parent exhausted by a trouble-prone child. "Where is your lightsaber?" Anakin couldn't look at him. "It's not lost, if that's what you're thinking." This was the truth. Anakin could feel it in the Force, and he knew exactly where it was. "No? No. Where is it, then? Can we talk about this later? Without your lightsaber, you may not have a later. I don't need a lecture, okay? How many times have we had this talk?" "Apparently one time less than we needed to." Anakin sighed. Obi-Wan could still make him feel about 9 years old. He gave a sullen nod toward one of the droid bodyguards. "He's got it." "He does? And how did this happen?" "I don't want to talk about it." "Anakin." "Hey, he's got yours too." "That's different." "This weapon is your life, Obi-Wan." He did a credible enough Kenobi impression that Palpatine had to smother a snort. "You must take care of it." "Perhaps," Obi-Wan said, as the droids clicked the binders onto their wrists and led them all away, "we should talk about this later." Anakin intoned severely, "Without your lightsaber, you may not have." "All right, all right." The Jedi Master surrendered with a rueful smile. "You win." Anakin grinned at him. "I'm sorry? What was that?" He couldn't remember the last time he'd won an argument with Obi-Wan. "Could you speak up a little?" "It's not very Jedi to gloat, Anakin." "I'm not gloating, Master," he said with a sidelong glance at Palpatine. "I'm just savoring the moment." This is how it feels to be Anakin Skywalker for now. The Supreme Chancellor returns your look with a hint of smile and a sliver of an approving nod. And for you, this tiny, trivial, comradely victory sparks a warmth and ease that relaxes the dragon grip of dread on your heart. Forget that you were captured. You and Obi-Wan have been captured before. Forget the deteriorating ship. Forget the Jedi-killing droids. You've faced worse. Forget General Grievous. What is he compared with Dooku? He can't even use the Force. So now, Here, for you, the situation comes down to this. You are walking between the two best friends you have ever had, with your precious droid friend faithfully worrying after your heels, on your way to win the Clone Wars. What you have done, what happened in the General's quarters, and more important, why it happened, is all burning away in Coruscant's atmosphere along with Dooku's decapitated corpse. Already it seems as if it happened to somebody else, as if you were somebody else when you did it. And it seems as if that man, the dragon-haunted man with a furnace for a heart and a mind as cold as the surface of that dead star, had really only been an image reflected in Dooku's open staring eyes. And by the time what's left of the conning spire crashes into the kilometers-thick crust of city that is the surface of Coruscant, those dead eyes will have burned away, and the dragon will burn with them. And you, for the first time in your life, will truly be free. This is how it feels to be Anakin Skywalker. For now. Chapter 7. Obi-Wan and Anakin 2. This is Obi-Wan Kenobi in the light. As he is prodded onto the bridge along with Anakin and Chancellor Palpatine, he has no need to look around to see the banks of control consoles tended by terrified Nymoidians. He doesn't have to turn his head to count the droidicas and super battle droids, or to gauge the positions of the brutal droid bodyguards. He doesn't bother to raise his eyes to meet the cold yellow stare fixed on him through a skull mask of armor plast. He doesn't even need to reach into the Force. He has already let the Force reach into him. The Force flows over him and around him as though he has stepped into a crystal-pure waterfall, lost in the green coils of a forgotten rainforest. When he opens himself to that sparkling stream, it flows into him and through him and out again without the slightest interference from his conscious will. The part of him that calls itself Obi-Wan Kenobi is no more than a ripple, an eddy in the pool into which he endlessly pours. There are other parts of him here as well. There is nothing here that is not a part of him, from the scuff mark on R2-D2's dome to the tattered hem of Palpatine's robe, from the spidering crack in one transparisteel panel of the curving view wall above to the great starships that still battle beyond it, because this is all part of the Force. Somehow, mysteriously, the cloud that has darkened the Force for near to a decade and a half has lightened around him now, and he finds within himself the limpid clarity he recalls from his school days at the Jedi Temple, when the Force was pure and clean and perfect. It is as though the darkness has withdrawn, has coiled back upon itself, to allow him this moment of clarity, to return to him the full power of the light, if only for the moment. He does not know why, but he is incapable of even wondering. In the Force, he is beyond questions. Why is meaningless. It is an echo of the past or a whisper from the future. All that matters for this infinite now is what and where and who. He is all 16 of the super battle droids, gleaming in laser-reflective chrome, arms loaded with heavy blasters. He is those blasters, and he is their targets. He is all 8 destroyer droids, waiting with electronic patience within their energy shields, and both bodyguards, and every single one of the shivering Nymoidians. He is their clothes, their boots, even each drop of reptile-scented moisture that rolls off them from the misting sprays they use to keep their internal temperatures down. He is the binders that cuff his hands, and he is the electro staff in the hands of the bodyguard at his back. He is both the lightsabers that the other droid bodyguard marches forward to offer to General Grievous. And he is the general himself. He is the general's duranium ribs. He is the beating of Grievous's alien heart, and is the silent pulse of oxygen pumped through his alien veins. He is the weight of 4 lightsabers at the general's belt, and is the greedy anticipation the captured weapons sparked behind the general's eyes. He is even the plan for his own execution simmering within the general's brain. He is all these things, but most importantly, he is still Obi-Wan Kenobi.
This is why he can simply stand, why he can simply wait. He has no need to attack or to defend. There will be battle here, but he is perfectly at ease, perfectly content to let the battle start when it will start, and let it end when it will end. Just as he will let himself live or let himself die, this is how a great Jedi makes war. General Grievous lifted the two lightsabers, one in each duranium hand, to admire them by the light of turbolaser blasts outside, and said,
"Rare trophies these, the weapon of Anakin Skywalker, and the weapon of General Kenobi. I look forward to adding them to my collection."
"That will not happen. I am in control here." The reply came from Obi-Wan's lips, but it was not truly Obi-Wan who spoke. Obi-Wan was not in control. He had no need for control. He had the Force. It was the Force that spoke through him. Grievous stalked forward. Obi-Wan saw death in the cold yellow stare through the skull mask's eye holes, and it meant nothing to him at all. There was no death. There was only the Force. He didn't have to tell Anakin to subtly nudge Chancellor Palpatine out of the line of fire. Part of him was Anakin and was doing this already. He didn't have to tell R2-D2 to access its combat subprograms and divert power to its booster rockets, claw arm, and cable gun. The part of him that was the little astromech had seen to all these things before they had even entered the bridge. Grievous towered over him.
"So confident you are, Kenobi."
"Not confident. Merely calm." From so close, Obi-Wan could see the hairline cracks and pitting in the bone-pale mask, and could feel the resonance of the general's electrosonic voice humming in his chest. He remembered the question of Master Jerul. "What is the good, if not the teacher of the bad? What is the bad, if not the task of the good?" He said, "We can resolve this situation without further violence. I am willing to accept your surrender."
"I'm sure you are."
The skull mask tilted inquisitively.
"Does this preposterous 'I will accept your surrender' line of yours ever actually work?"
"Sometimes. When it doesn't, people get hurt. Sometimes they die." Obi-Wan's blue-gray eyes met squarely those of yellow behind the mask. "By people, in this case, you should understand that I mean you."
"I understand enough. I understand that I will kill you."
Grievous threw back his cloak and ignited both lightsabers.
"Here, now, with your own blade."
The Force replied through Obi-Wan's lips, "I don't think so." The electro-drivers that powered Grievous's limbs could move them faster than the human eye can see. When he swung his arm, it and his fist and the lightsaber within it would literally vanish, wiped from existence by sheer mind-numbing speed. An imitation quantum event. No human being could move remotely as fast as Grievous, not even Obi-Wan. But he didn't have to. In the Force, part of him was Grievous's intent to slaughter, and the surge from intent to action translated to Obi-Wan's response without thought. He had no need for a plan, no use for tactics. He had the Force. That sparkling waterfall coursed through him, washing away any thought of danger or safety, of winning or losing. The Force, like water, takes on the shape of its container without effort, without thought. The water that was Obi-Wan poured itself into the container that was Grievous's attack. And while some materials might be watertight, Obi-Wan had yet to encounter any that were entirely, as it were, Force-tight. While the intent to swing was still forming in Grievous's mind, the part of the Force that was Obi-Wan was also the part of the Force that was R2-D2, as well as an internal fusion welder Anakin had retrofitted into R2-D2's primary grappling arm. And so there was no need for actual communication between them. It was only Obi-Wan's personal sense of style that brought his customary gentle smile to his face and his customary gentle murmur to his lips.
R2? Even as he opened his mouth, a panel was sliding aside in the little droid's fuselage. By the time the droid's nickname had left his lips, the fusion welder had deployed and fired a blinding spray of sparks hot enough to melt duranium, and in the quarter of a second, while even Grievous's electronically enhanced reflexes had him startled and distracted, the part of the Force that was Obi-Wan tried a little trick, a secret one, that it had been saving up for just such an occasion as this. Because all there on the bridge was one in the Force, from the gross structure of the ship itself, to the quantum dance of the electron shells of individual atoms. And because, after all, the nerves and muscles of the biodroid general were creations of electronics and duranium, not living tissue with will of its own, it was just barely possible that with exactly the right twist of his mind, in that one vulnerable quarter of a second, while Grievous was distracted, flinching backward from a spray of flame hot enough to burn even his armored body, Obi-Wan might be able to temporarily reverse the polarity of the electro drivers in the general's mechanical hands. Which is exactly what he did. Durasteel fingers sprang open, and two lightsabers fell free. He reached through the Force, and the Force reached through him. His blade flared to life while still in the air. It flipped toward him, and as he lifted his hands to meet it, its blue flame flashed between his wrists and severed the binders before the hand grip smacked solidly into his palm. Obi-Wan was so deep in the Force that he wasn't even surprised it had worked. He made a quarter turn to face Anakin, who was already in the air, having leapt simultaneously with Obi-Wan's gentle murmur, because Obi-Wan and Anakin were, after all, two parts of the same thing. Anakin's flip carried him over Obi-Wan's head at the perfect range for Obi-Wan's blade to flick out and burn through his partner's binders. And while Grievous was still flinching away from the fountain of fusion fire, Anakin landed with his own hand extended. Obi-Wan felt a liquid surge in the waterfall that he was, and Anakin's lightsaber sang through the air, and Anakin caught it. And so one single second after Grievous had begun to summon the intent to swing, Obi-Wan Kenobi and Anakin Skywalker stood back to back in the center of the bridge, expressionlessly staring past the snarling blue energy of their lightsabers. Obi-Wan regarded the general without emotion. "Perhaps you should reconsider my offer." Grievous braced himself against a control